So everybody's here. So we now have some idea of how to understand this Samatha practice. Samatha itself means appeasement. We have to be appeased to see things as they really are. We have explained that in the Theravada tradition, very often this training in appeasement and training in wisdom are often explained quite separately. They are different. They are also different mental factors. But in the northern tradition, not only in northern tradition explaining the bodhisattva path, northern tradition especially important in explaining the bodhisattva path, but it also explains the path of the disciples, how to become an arahat. But only in the Pali tradition you will find the commentaries to the sutras, which actually explain the meditation aspect of training how to become an arahat, which is further developed in the commentaries of Abhidharma. So the northern tradition tries to see this training in appeasement and the training in wisdom as one complementary to the other. So also the explanation of the four foundations of mindfulness, which is a base for understanding the Buddhist meditation, is also not the same. In the northern tradition, the mindfulness is the root of wisdom. And why is the root of wisdom? Because by mindfulness we come to the understanding of impermanence, however we explain it. Now you have been learning the Heart Sutra, which is in a way the essence of understanding the Bodhisattva path. In the Heart Sutra, it also mentions in a way the Vipassana, it mentions the practice of mindfulness. But the mindfulness here is what? Mindfulness here is you cannot reach anything. The mindfulness of the body is you can't reach the body. The mindfulness, because the impermanence actually you cannot reach. This is already the idea you will find in Northern Buddhism, the Sautrantika. What we actually see is the mental image. Because what we see is what we think about is already past. It's not there anymore. And what we see as a past, we only see as the mental image. The Yogacara also works on these premises. So, and this is also what the scriptures teach. You open the Dhammapada, the first of verse of Dhammapada. Mano pubangama dhamma, mano seta, mano maya. All the phenomena, the mind is their predecessor. They originate in mind. They are led by the mind, and they are contained in the mind. So we understand the phenomena through the mind, and they are contained in the mind. This is the main premises for understanding the Yogacara, and they are very useful. So it means the outer objects, actually they are emptiness. Because the outer objects are emptiness, the mind which is, observes them must be emptiness also. And the emptiness is emptiness because you cannot reach it. You want to hold the space, you cannot reach it. Now you are working with the breath. Breath is the wind element. The text explains that the other names, they are particular names. The wind is a common name for the phenomena of in-breath and out-breath. The wind also you cannot catch. And this is the beginning of the understanding. We use so-called forceful attention because we want to catch the breath. Right? And who wants to catch the breath? This is why our text after counting explains the five aggregates. Five aggregates precisely explain the fact of the non-self. When we see the five aggregates, we don't see the self. When we see the self, we don't see the five aggregates. If this is not enough, then further analyze the six inner bases, six outer bases, none of them belong to any self. If still not enough, six inner bases, six outer bases, and the consciousness that arises on their base, this also cannot be the self. So when you smart, the five aggregates is enough to understand there is no self. That which wants to hold the breath, this is the false idea of the self. And this false idea of the self is in Buddhism called the perversion, vipalasa. Ignorance is explained as vipalasa. The real vipalasa is the seeing the self where there is no self. But in order to understand this vipalasa of seeing the self where there is no self, we have to understand the vipalasa of seeing the permanence in impermanent, seeing the fulfillment in that which is impermanent and cannot bring fulfillment. In Theravada, in that which is by definition cannot be, has lasting purity, to see the lasting purity, what cannot be lasting purity. Actually, this is same as suffering. We see pleasure in suffering because we see the lasting purity in that which is impure. Now, in the northern Buddhism, even in the path of the disciple, instead of purity you come to emptiness, because you understand the non suffering or non-satisfactory state rather than suffering. They translate pain, they translate suffering, but maybe the best translation is the non-satisfactory state. The non-satisfactory state in impermanence. However you improve it, however you work on it, you may do qigong, you may do yoga, you may do whatever It will be very helpful, but it will not save us from impermanence. So impermanence is a non-satisfactory state. In order to attain the lasting satisfactory state, we have to understand emptiness. This is what is Buddhism about. So because impermanence is a not satisfactory state, it is empty. Empty of what? It is empty of self. The self of beings is emphasized in the path of the disciples. The selflessness of everything is emphasized in the path of the bodhisattva. This is the difference. That's why the Heart Sutra explain from the perspective of the emptiness being the only reality. There is no other reality. The emptiness of what? Emptiness of self. Emptiness of self is the suchness. Whether you like it or not, it is a suchness. Suchness is the non-dualistic understanding of emptiness. And the Buddha is the one Tathagata, who Tathagata, Tathagata, he is gone in suchness, and he is coming, he has come in suchness. So the Buddha is one who has come in suchness and who has gone in suchness. And the suchness is the only thing that is there. But in order to understand suchness, we have to understand impermanence, we have to understand the selflessness of the five aggregates. Then we can go deep into the meditation. The meditation on the breath also can go. Meditation on the breath in northern, just like in southern tradition, based on the Anapanasati Sutta, explains the meditation on the breath as a complete course of liberation. It is not explained with other meditation objects. It is explained with the meditation on the breath. You don't need to change your object, because the breath, as the text is explains, is based on both body and the mind. The five aggregates are nothing but the body and the mind. And whatever we experience on the base of the body and the mind. So the meditation on the breath is the best meditation to understand what is our body and the mind, the base for all our experiences about. Now, we have explained the shamatha aspect of the practice, and we have also explained that the shamatha aspect of the practice cannot be separated from the vipassana side of the practice, because the meditation on the breath is a complete course of liberation. This complete course of liberation is summarized by these 16 exercises, which explain the practice of the four foundations of mindfulness. The practice of four foundations of mindfulness is the practice which leads to the acquiring of the 37 causes of enlightenment. No matter how we meditate, Buddhism, if it does not explain clearly, you cannot understand what the middle way is all about. And they are the stages. And the stages, they are in these stages, the shamatha and vipassana become complementary. We also know, or should know, that Buddha got his realization under the Bodhi tree due to the using of the supernatural powers. And supernatural powers, they are the result, natural result of mastering the shamatha. We practice shamatha in order finally to use the supernatural powers to understand in depth our experience in the samsara. And the emphasis of Buddhism is in order to not to be deluded about the highest reality, we have to penetrate the worldly reality. The worldly reality is only the impermanence and the selflessness of the experience of impermanence, the selflessness of the experience of the five aggregates. So, according also to this Asanga's explanation, in order to avoid the mistake of forceful attention, not only in meditation but also in life, just think how much trouble this forceful attention has been causing us in life, because we want to grab something, we want to grasp something, and we react completely mechanically, without understanding, without mindfulness. Because of that, we are not arahats, we are not the Buddhas. Because we have so deep habits which are not rooted in mindfulness. Now, according to Asanga, in order to remove this forceful attention, we have to have the wisdom from hearing, and we have to have the wisdom from contemplation. And that we get, as we have said, only when we have faith in what we're doing, we are motivated in what we're doing, we practice, and we get some results, we get satisfaction in our practice. Otherwise, this forceful attention will accompany us always. So this is the first power to be accumulated. According to, this is very important, and this is very complementary to Southern Buddhism. Northern Buddhism, especially the Yogacara, but all traditions of Northern Buddhism emphasize, even the Tantric traditions, emphasize that meditation is a holistic process. You will find the same idea in Theravada, we have said. It is an organic process. You cannot separate the different parts of the path. The only way of realization is to see them together. You cannot separate shamatha and vipassana. You cannot separate the 37 causes of enlightenment. You cannot separate the 8 parts of the noble middle path, noble eightfold path. You cannot separate them. But it is our differentiating thinking which needs to separate them in order to see them together. And it is, of course, also correct. We are dependent on the differentiating thinking. But the differentiating thinking, from the point of view of Yogacara, establishes the object in the mind in an illusionary way, because in no object is really established in the mind. So the Yogacara starts from this premises. Whatever we establish in the mind is only illusionary establishment. The Four Noble Truths, when you establish them, they are also illusionary established. Because in the mind nothing is really established. So from this point of view, we should understand the path in an organic way. so that we can put all these parts of the past together on the premise of emptiness. That's why we are chanting the Heart Sutra. The Heart Sutra tries to convey just this meaning, nothing else. When emptiness makes sense, everything makes sense. When emptiness doesn't make sense, nothing can make sense, which the differentiating consciousness establishes. Because it is a job of differentiating consciousness to separate reality. But the reality is not separating. This is ultimately the meaning of the dependent origination. So this awareness of the illusionary nature of separation is a very important part of the understanding of meditation in the northern tradition, and it is very useful no matter what Buddhism we train in, what Buddhism we try to understand. It is very, very useful. Nagarjuna goes saying that when you understand the emptiness, the meditation will be much faster and the realization will be much faster. If you are a bodhisattva, it will last three incalculable kalpas, 100,000 small kalpas. So it will be very shorter. So you get the dimension of timelessness. This dimension of timelessness paradoxically still exists in time. But this dimension of timelessness is very, very important experience in meditation. And this dimension of timelessness, the skillful means, is to understand, as the Heart Sutra is teaching, that there is nothing to be attained. We cannot attain. When we attain something, it stands. This is a paradox. And Theravada tends not to work with paradoxes. In a way, Mahayana is all about the paradoxes. The path of Bodhisattva is all about the paradoxes. When you read the Transcendental Wisdom Sutras, it is a great complex base of all the paths of the Bodhisattva. It is just talking, every page you will find paradoxes. Because our situation in the world is very paradoxical. We want to always grasp the ungraspable. And it manifests by this instinct of forceful attention. So we have to have wisdom from hearing. We have to hear that the selflessness is a true nature of our experience. We have to contemplate on this, see that it makes sense. If it does not make sense, then Buddhism does not make sense. That's why some of us have trained in Burmese tradition. In a Burmese tradition, when the Burma became part of the British Empire, so many, many Muslims, Christians come to Burma, and the Burmese start to convert into Islam, especially, but also into Christianity. Because they are very active. Why? Because they don't understand the selflessness, and it makes sense, the God for the farmer. If God protects you, protect your family. This is what is the biblical tradition about. When you obey, he will protect. When you don't obey, he will not protect. It is very simple, and you don't need to think much. So they came with the methods like Mahasisayana, and so on. These were like great bodhisattvas who have, you make your own experience what is selflessness. So simplify the method, and no need for any deep concentration. Just see yourself, the selflessness is the fact. You cannot catch in your experience any standing self. And it worked. Then simple methods prevented people from converting to other religion, because when you practice vipassana, then you see that it makes sense, selflessness. So in our text also, in order to practice concentration, you have to have some basis in vipassana. In order to practice vipassana, you have to have basis in concentration. You cannot separate them. So when you concentrate, only then you will see that the object of your concentration, when you analyze it, is not the self, but it is these five aggregates. So that is why this vipalasa, perversion of seeing the self where there is no self, can only be removed when we hear and when we contemplate on the idea of selflessness. Then we can apply mindfulness, because the mindfulness is the way to realize the selflessness and to detach. Therefore, in the Abhidharma, when you see enumeration of the positive qualities of the virtues, first comes the confidence, then comes mindfulness. After mindfulness comes fear of doing evil and shame of doing evil. And then all the other positive qualities come. Due to confidence means understanding, it is not a blind face, and due to mindfulness. So after you have the power of right hearing and right contemplation, you get the power of mindfulness. So we have explained this is the first and the second stage, and the third and the fourth stage. When mindfulness starts to crystallize and gets settled, so that you don't leave the object of your meditation. But the object of your meditation, as far as Yogacara is concerned, is only concept. Finally, the five aggregates is also only a concept. If you not thought about the five aggregates, you will not understand the five aggregates. So it is a concept, and you see in your mind according to the concept. If you make another aggregate, it is also possible. Why not make an aggregate of memory or something like that? But once you make these divisions, then you will see according to this division. So, because nothing is really fixed in the mind. So now you have similar idea in Theravada. You have the panyati, the concept according to the truth, like the five aggregates. And you have the concepts which are not according to the truth, like the lasting man or woman. So You have very similar lines of reasoning, but they develop in a different way. So it's very, very good to see the Buddhism as one, being explained in different ways. So when you have the power of mindfulness, you can illumine the mind. Illumine the mind about what? Illumine the mind about the perversions. About the perversion of seeing permanence in impermanence, about the perversion of seeing the lasting happiness in that which is not lasting, the perversion of seeing the self in the that which is perfectly selfless. So this brings light into the mind, and this will help for joining, as we have learned, the shamatha and vipassana together. When shamatha and vipassana are joined together, then you are abandoning the defilements, abandoning the five hindrances. These are the defilements that prevents you to go into the deeper stage of perception, the more subtle perception. So you have this fifth and sixth stage, you develop the power of mindfulness, and this power of mindfulness will clean up the mess, and you will be in the state of the relaxation and clarity. This is done by the power of awareness. When you have this power of awareness, then you will see very subtle fluctuations of the mind. And you get this power of awareness because, if you're working on shamatha, because you don't allow the tendency of mind to sing to become prominent, and you don't allow the tendency of mind to excitement be prominent. So you are in the state of peace, shamayati. If you allow them to be prominent, you will never attain peace. And that can be done only by awareness. Awareness of what? Awareness that we have explained, that when the mind has tendency to excitement, and it happens even in jhana, jhana is only the means for experiencing the continuity of balanced mind. But the in jhana still you have these fluctuations, unless you are a perfect meditator. And the perfect meditator you become only when you can practice this prashabdi, lightness and relaxation as a natural state, connected with natural sankhara upekha, with a natural detachment from all the formations in the mind. So here you come to the theory that nothing in mind is really established. What is established is illusionary established. But it does not mean you don't have to establish good concepts in the mind. They are very important. If you don't establish the good concepts into the mind, then the mind will go through perversions. But still, it does not mean that something is really established in the mind. So, after getting the power of awareness, this awareness will teach you how to use equal effort. Not bending your mind to the object with too much effort. That means when the mind has tendency, even a slight tendency to excitement, you let go immediately. before it comes to expression. That's why you remain in the state of peace. And when the mind has tendency to thinking, then you have to lift it up. How you lift it up? By will, no? Applying the will. And we have explained, you apply the will because you want to lift the mind. You cannot lift it only by will. You have to lift it by many, many skillful means, making a proper effort, having a understanding of the real nature of the phenomena, differentiate correctly. All this has to come, and there has to be also happiness in order to overcome this tendency of mind to thinking, which lifts the mind. So you lift the mind when it needs to be lifted, you restrain the mind when it needs to be restrained, and you detach completely from the mind when the mind is balanced. This is how you, by practicing the equal effort, you get to the state of perfect appeasement and one-pointedness of mind. One-pointedness of mind means a perfect appeasement. But this perfect appeasement will not last for very long. It has to, there has to be the, after the power of balanced effort, you need the power of the habit. When you have the power of the habit of practicing these good dharmas, these virtues, then the mind naturally stays in the state of spontaneous attention. Spontaneous attention is, you can explain as non-attention. Same like detachment from feeling, you can explain, and it is explained so, as no feeling. Why? Because a feeling is always connected with these anushayas, these latent tendencies of grabbing for the pleasant feeling, of rejecting for the unpleasant feeling, and of being bored, arati, not being happy about neither pleasant nor unpleasant feeling. So we are caught in this cycle. Meditation is all about getting over the cycle. And it can be only done when you join the shamatha and vipassana together. Because as we have said, if shamatha is practice separate from vipassana, it will only shake off the defilements, that it will not uproot them. If the vipassana is not connected to shamatha, it will also not be able to uproot the defilements. But only when they are become one, then they can uproot the defilements. That is what is explained here by, in terms of these 16 exercises. The first four exercises, they concerned with the mindfulness of the body. Mindfulness of the body emphasizes the practice of shamatha. It is a base for the practice of shamatha, because the body is the object. And when the object becomes a subtle, so the sensations become a subtle, and sensation is linked to the body, but it is part of the mind. And it rules the mind. Sensations are ruling the mind. What mind? The samsaric mind. Not the enlightened mind, but the samsaric mind. What we cling actually is not for the object, but for the sensation of the object. And this, we cling to the sensation of the object based on the previous sensation, based on the memory of the sensation. So we not cling to the present sensation, we cling to the past sensation. This is very important to understand. So here we have these forces, these factors which work for purification of the mind. We have the aspect of the attention, we have the aspect of the stages. All this combined makes this complex of shamatha. Then shamatha becomes very clear. But the shamatha has to be complemented by vipassana to get over the defilements and uproot the defilements. So the meditation on the body must also be connected with the, even so it emphasizes shamatha, must be connected with vipassana. And how you get vipassana into it? Meditation on the four elements. All the body, what belongs to the body, is based on the four elements. The colors also based on the four elements. The smells based on the four elements. The sounds based on the four elements. Everything that has form is based on the four elements. So the meditation on the four elements will bring you into the vipassana about the body. This is very important to understand. When you combine the two together, only then you will understand the body. You will understand that the experience of the body depends on the subtleness of the object, and also you will understand that the body itself is ungraspable. This is the emphasis of the northern tradition. You cannot reach the body. Why? Because whatever, when you do the meditation on the elements, finally the units of the matter, however you call them, atoms or kalapas and so on, you can explode them into the finally four elements and what is derived from the four elements. But actually what is derived from four elements is also just four elements. If there is no hardness, softness in the color, there cannot be any color whatsoever. And same about the sound, same about the smell, about the taste. So it boils down to the four elements. So the perception of the four elements is the non-perverted perception of the form. And these four elements also, they, strictly speaking, they cannot be grasped. Why? When I see the hardness, I see it on the base of the softness. If I don't have softness in my hand, I don't know that this table is hard, right? So all this is also impermanence, relative, ungraspable. So the base of, before we go to the 16 exercises, it is important to understand the preliminary to the 16 exercises is understanding, as we will see, of the aggregates, dependent origination, and the Four Noble Truths. These are the right concepts. when you keep them in mind, then you will not be deluded. But still they are, as far as Yogacara is concerned, they are the concepts which you put into the mind. And what you put into the mind, you see accordingly, like the computer, you will, same principle. If you don't put some programming into the computer, it will not work. But this programming you can remove and put another programming. Is it not so? I'm not an expert in computer. Anyway. So now, we have to learn how to understand the form in order to understand the sensations. So the meditation on sensations is also shamatha and vipassana. You cannot understand sensations by shamatha only. You also cannot understand sensations by vipassana only. You have to combine shamatha and vipassana to understand the sensations. You cannot separate them. This is the meaning of the Vedana Anupassana, as explained here in the 16 exercises. And also, you can only understand the mind. We will see the 4 exercises on Citta Anupassana, the meditation on the mind. You have to combine shamatha and vipassana. Only by shamatha you cannot understand the mind. Only by vipassana you cannot understand the mind. You can only understand the mind when you combine the shamatha and vipassana. And then, because these are the most important factors of our experience, then you come to the contemplation of the mental phenomena. These dhammas you can translate as mental phenomena. Mental phenomena, which mental phenomena? It does not mean that what is our catty cooking for lunch, this is also a phenomena, but it means the what Theravada calls the vijamana panyati, the concepts which really exist, which are corresponding to the reality. The same in Yogacara, you have to, when you make vipassana, you have to understand the name, you have to understand how the name is related to the actual experience, you have to understand the characteristics, that means the special characteristics of the phenomena and the common characteristics of the phenomena. You have to understand the paksha, that means if you use some meditation method, for what purpose you use it. If you use it correctly, that is a white paksha, the white side of the meditation. If you don't use it correctly, it will be the black side, like the white clear side of the moon and the black side of the moon. And then you have to understand the logic of all this, how it is related, what are the functions, and how it is related to suchness. So the vipassana becomes very complex. But again, the vipassana and shamatha, they can only do the job when they join together. And they are joined together, and not necessarily on the base of the ungraspable object, which is emptiness, which is the signlessness, which is the desirelessness. These are the doors to nirvana. But in the philosophy of transcendental wisdom, nirvana is a natural state. The reality you cannot attain. Nirvana is a natural state. And the way to get into Nirvana is to give rise to the mind effortlessly. And that you only can do when you master the shamatha and vipassana together. The effortless application of the mind. This is the last of these four attentions. The previous attention leads to effortless state of application. Effortless state of application of the mind is finally leads to beyond the Vedana sensation, beyond sensation, attention, beyond attention. This is a paradoxical world. So everything makes sense when you put it together. And it does not make sense when you separate it. And this is also the meaning of the 16 exercises. The 37 factors of enlightenment become perfectly clear when you meditate on the Dharma and you have the deep understanding of the Dharma. You have the understanding of the impermanence of the world, of the five aggregates, and you penetrate in our scripture here, it's a little different from Theravada. You penetrate the prahana dhatu, that means the element of abandoning, then the element of viraga, element of letting go, the desire, and the element of cessation. When you understand these three elements, you understand the world as it is. And you are in the realm of non-attainment. But you can also practice this element of non-attainment, the technique of non-attainment, to see from the very beginning the nonsensical nature of establishing anything in the mind. This is the Zen practice. You want to establish something in the mind, it is very nonsensical. And you can be led to the understanding that this is reality of the aggregates, reality of the inner and outer basis, the reality of the 18 elements, the reality of dependent origination, the reality of the Four Noble Truths. But still you have to learn about these realities in order to understand their ungraspable nature. So this is how we can learn Buddhism, by seeing things not separately, but seeing things as the whole. And this is the emphasis of Yogacara. This is the emphasis of the Northern tradition. This is the emphasis of the non-dualistic understanding of reality. The reality is one, but we separate it because we have not penetrated its real nature. So that much for now. Then we can start now. We are well equipped. We have a good rucksack. We have a good shoes. We have a good supply of water. We can go climbing up the mountain, and we will start to read the text in the evening and get some more understanding of the practice that we are pursuing now. Okay? So please, if there are any questions, think about it. I'm trying my best to explain a very complicated system in as easy way as possible. But it is very worthwhile to think about it and to get some clear idea that how important it is to see the whole. It is actually taught in all traditions of Buddhism, only in a different way.
Can we ask a question now, or just this evening?
Okay, we can discuss.
With the element contemplations, for example, with smell, right now, smell is walking in here. I don't quite understand how I experience heaviness or lightness, except if this, it's like a concept, a mental construct that I'm putting on top of the experience. So if the smell is strong, is that what we consider heavy? And how is it, where's
the
water element?
No. Okay. These qualities of smell, of color, they are called, they are called derived elements, but they are not derived. They exist at the same time as the elements. So we cannot call them, strictly speaking, derived. Derived is maybe not the right translation. But they are, as far as worldly experience is concerned, they are the on what our real experience of touch is based on.
So do we apply?
And so it means this touch is always changing. But these elements, they will be there. Whenever there is form, there will be these qualities. And you can actually, when you practice, have you done meditation on the elements?
Just a little bit, not a lot.
When you go deep into it, then you will see. First, this is very... When you practice Vipassana, even according to other systems like Goenka and so on, the body will disintegrate into small particles. This is very important experience for Vipassana. Now the peculiarity of this technique, which is very unique, only exists in this Abhidharma tradition. You can feather, if you have a strong concentration, you can further analyze these particles. And at first they move with incredible speed. So it is like splitting the atoms in the laboratories. It's amazing. They move with incredible speed, but because you have practiced the concentration, you should even master to some extent all the jhanas, even the arupas, to have a very powerful mind, then you can actually find these qualities in these elements, in these particles. Then these particles that have been moving very quickly, they will move slower and slower, and finally they stop. Nothing moves. Emptiness. So the movement is illusionary. This is precisely what the Northern Buddhism explains, Nagarjuna. So movement is illusionary. Yet everything we experience is in terms of the movement. If there is no movement, we don't experience anything. We only experience in terms of the past, present and the future. But in fact, the phenomena arise from nowhere and go to nowhere. Past is not there, the future has not yet come, and the present, you cannot experience separate from the past and the future. So in Nagarjuna it is described theoretically, but in this meditation on the elements you actually experience it with your own body. Now, how to explain? The scientists, they only know emptiness due to the instruments, but they don't know emptiness based on the mind. But this experience of emptiness is the essence of the Buddhist understanding. Only that experience makes ordinary man a Buddha. Okay, we have talked much enough today, so let us do some sitting. We can do 15 minutes break, and we have two sessions of 45 minutes. If you wish to make a continuous meditation, you can do so.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.